Excuse me. So let me review what we studied. So we are let pi be a irreducible admissible representation of an F, where F is local field. But anyway, we can assume that it's, let's assume that it's periodic, because for Archimedean places, it's well known. So we defined the gamma factors, R, I, psi, where psi is a fixed additive character. And we define the L function and also epsilon factors. Okay, so the gamma factors are related in this following way. L 1 minus S pi Ri tilde Ls pi Ri. Okay, so we define these three objects. Okay, so I asked you to do some exercise. So I'll surely nobody did that. So let me do it here. So let me look at. So I mean, I asked you to see the cancellation. Remember that we defined this gamma factors first, and then we defined R function as a numerator. After all the cancellation, we define the L as a numerator of the polynomial. So let's look at explicitly. So let's calculate this. Let's look at that. So first of all, the way you do it is we have to first calculate this object first when pi is supercuspidal. So we have to first, we need to calculate when pi is supercuspidal. And if pi is supercuspidal, these objects are fairly simple. So let me state a theorem rather than proving it. So let me state the theorem. So the properties of L functions for supercuspidal. So now our situation is that I keep changing notation. In my notation sigma. So let me stick to my notation. Sigma is now generic supercuspidal representation. Supercuspidal representation. Then the first statement is unless this P, the parabolic subgroup, is self-conjugate, and this is equivalent, these local coefficients never vanishes. So what that tells you is that, remember that these local coefficients are related to gamma factors. So what that means is that psi, hence, so that will imply that these L functions are all identically one for all I. So in this, unless this is true, then all the L functions are just identically one in this situation. And if you look at the list of L function I gave you, since L S sigma R I greater than or equal to 3. So this is second property. So if you look at the list, the L function from the third, L function and that on, third and fourth, and the maximum length is 6. Okay, so that you can have at the most 6 L functions. But if you look at from third on, these all come from non-self-conjugate cases. So all come from, comes from non-self-conjugate cases. Except one of them, except E8-2 case. Okay, so you just check one by one. And so that means that this has to be all trivially one, identically one. So L, S, sigma, R, I is identically one for all I greater than or equal to 3. So in this case, you just check directly. So this one exceptional case, you check directly. So then you can see that all the L functions are just identically one. Yeah, that's right. Okay, so these are two separate statements. This is for general, arbitrary parabolic.
Oh, so you mean if you're in a situation where you have more than three L functions in the parabolic in that situation, you want to non-self-conjugate?
So this is arbitrary, P is arbitrary. So let's say, okay, so let's say E61, for example, okay? E61 case. There are three L functions, okay? So one is a triple product L function. And the second one is Rankine-Selberg. So this is GL3 and GL2, okay? And second one is the Rankine-Selberg. And third one is just the L function of GL2, pi 3. Okay? So this third one is, if pi 3 is supercustodial, this is identically one.
And yeah, but I don't understand what it means when you say comes from
non-self-conjugate case. When you do induction. So you can, this is equivalent to some sigma prime R1. This becomes the first L function of some other group. Okay. Okay, so the important thing is that this is all always true. When you have a supercustodial, from the third L function on, it's identically one. And the three, each so then the first, you only have to worry about the first and second L function. This is a product of the form. Where alpha j is complex number with the absolute value 1. Okay, so the L function of supercustodial representation is very simple. It's basically 1 minus the absolute value 1 complex number q to the negative s. So all the poles of this local L function lie on unitary axis. Okay, that's not the case for example, Steinberg representation. I'm going to explain in a minute. And the fourth property is that if you divide a product of L function, divide by the intertwining operator, if you divide by that L function, this is entire. Entire and non-vanishing. So basically the poles of this intertwining operator is contained in this L function. And fifth, the following are equivalent. So A, statement A is that this has a pole. The intertwining operator is a pole at S equals 0. Second, either R1 or one of the L function has a pole or at S equals 0. Okay. But only one of them. Only one of them. One of them has a pole. So both cannot have a pole. Either one or the other has a pole. Not both. And third, this induced representation at zero is irreducible. And sigma is invariant under this phi group element. So these are equivalent. And the last condition is that suppose I, S naught, sigma is reducible for S naught positive integer, positive real number. So suppose this is reducible, then you have only two reducibility points, either 1/2 or 1. Then S naught is either 1/2 or 1. So this induced representation can have reducibility point, either 1/2 or 1. Okay, so this is the basic result of Shahidi. Actually, it comes from basically number 5. So if it's irreducible, it's irreducible at 0, okay, that means that it has to be reducible somewhere under this condition at the unique point. So that's the point either 1/2 or 1. Okay, so if you look at this Rankin Salvo case, so in order to have so Rankine-Salvo case, let's say sigma is supercuspidal representation of GLN F. Okay, so according to our properties, this L function can have is non-trivial only when you twist by control gradient. So this is a reasonable candidate for non-trivial L function. So in this case, so this is a 1 minus q to the negative rs to the inverse, where r is the order of the cyclic group. Eta. So this is a set of characters such that sigma twist by eta is equivalent to sigma. So this is a cyclic group. So eta should satisfy, eta to the nth power is 1. So eta must satisfy this condition. So that means that R, that implies that R divides n.
R divides.
So the this is the order must divide n. So this is order of cyclical. So anyway, the important thing is L function is of this form. Okay. So now let me go back to the exercise I gave you. So suppose pi is the generalized Steinberg representation. So namely, it's the unique irreducible sub representation of the following induced representation. Determinant of P minus 1 divided by 2 rho tensor da da da. Okay, let me write that one more time. P minus 1 divided by 2 minus 1 rho minus P minus 1 rho. Here rho is the supercuspid representation of, let's say, GLK. And so this induction will be from GNK times GNK to GLKP. So that will be the induction. Okay, so we are asked to, so what is calculate? So how do you calculate this L function? Pi, Rankine-Cellberg L function of pi cross rho tilde. So let's say you want to calculate that L function. Okay, so this is tempered. Okay, so this is a tempered representation. So according to the conjecture I wrote down last week, this should have no pole for real S bigger than 0. This should be holomorphic. Okay. So in order to calculate this L, we first need to calculate gamma. Okay. From the multiplicativity of gamma factors. So we need to first calculate gamma factors. And I already wrote down the multiplicativity last week. Okay. So if you look at the note, I wrote down by multiplicativity, this will be the product of rank one gamma factors. So this will be the product of gamma S plus P minus 1 rho tilde psi and gamma S plus P minus 1 minus 1 rho tilde psi da 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 S minus P minus 1 rho tilde psi. So this is the gamma factor. This is from multiplicativity. Gamma. And so from this, now we calculate the L function. So we know already what this looks like. So this is a gamma factor attached to supercuspid representation. So now we already know what the L function looks like. This looks like this. Okay, so you just plug in. So now we have to plug in everything, and then we have to see the cancellation. Okay, so let's not worry about epsilon factors. Epsilon factor is just q to the some monomial. So let's only worry about the L factors, because that's where the cancellation comes from. So let's put all the epsilon factors. So we look at the L. So L function is S plus minus 1 rho tilde, and L is, if you look at it, you get 1 minus S minus P minus 1 rho tilde. So that comes from this. And this one you get LS P minus 1 rho tilde. And you get 2 minus S minus P minus 1 rho tilde. Da-da-da-da. You get LS P minus 1 rho tilde. You get 1 plus P minus 1 minus S rho tilde. You get this. So all the observe all the epsilon factors here. So now we have to see the cancellation. The numerator and denominator will cancel each other. Okay? So remember that this is so you have to note that if you have that, so you get so this is okay, so what is the cancellation? So this one and this one will cancel each other. Okay, so and this one, next one cancel, and this one will all cancel. So why is this one cancel each other? Because this one is, according to our calculation, this is rough. This looks like 1 minus Q to the some power S plus P minus 1 minus 1 to the inverse. Okay? And this one looks like 1 minus Q to the minus R 1 minus S minus P minus 1 to the inverse. So now, okay, let's not worry about the inverse here. So this thing, so you move this to the, you take out S plus minus. So if you take out that, you get 1 minus, and you put the inverse here. So you get Q to the minus R, then you put the minus sign everywhere. 1 minus P minus 1 minus S. So you see, do you see the same thing here? So this thing are same. So cancel. So then this factor will come out. So that will observe, that will be observed with the epsilon factor. So this all cancels. Okay? So this is very important for to define the L function for tempered representation. So that will be what will happen. So eventually, this becomes some other factor here. Okay, all the monomials we observe here. So what you will have is you will have 1 plus okay, so that's the gamma factors. So according to our definition, so according to our definition, after canceling all out, numerator will be the L factor. So numerator will be basically the denominator, because the L function is the inverse of the polynomial. So that will be the numerator. So our L function is that. So that's the explicit L function of local representation. So if you give me any Langlands data, then I can compute the gamma and epsilon, gamma and the L factors easily in this way. So as you can see that this doesn't have a pole, no pole, holomorphic, no pole for real S bigger than zero. So that's the special case of the conjecture. That the conjecture is that this is true for arbitrary tempered representation. because the L function is always this form. So this, without that, that says pole only at the unitary axis. Okay? So this will have a pole when S, real part of S is minus P minus 1 divided by half. So it's pole as left side. Okay, so now we can, now let's go back to our global situation. So let pi v be a globally generic cuspid representation of M A, and remember that I wrote down the functional equation. So I wrote down the following functional equation. So S is the finite set of places such that pi v, psi v are unramified for v not in S. Okay. So then I wrote down the following functional equation. Last time, okay, so I wrote down the following that functional equation. Now if you use that relationship there, so now we replace this gamma by epsilon and 1 minus S and S, and you multiply L function there, so that will imply that now if you set LS pi RI to be the product of all V, okay? So then we have the following, the functional equation. Then, okay, let me write down as a theorem. So this will be one of the ingredients we need. Okay, so theorem is that we have the following functional equation. Here the epsilon is the product over epsilon factor. Okay, so this is the functional equation of L function we need in applying converse theorem. Okay, so now we got functional equation. Now next thing we have to do is to prove that these L functions are holomorphic, entire on the certain for pi, and then bounded in vertical strip. So hopefully I'll be able to prove that today, maybe not today. At least I'll try to prove holomorphic. Okay. So in order to do that, now let's go to section 12. So you know, in my notes, there will be normalization of intertwining operators. Okay, so we have to normalize intertwining operators. So let me remind you what I'm up to. So recall the global intertwining operator. So I wrote as M, MS pi, W naught, F. Here F is the product, the pure tensor, and this was the global intertwining operators. So this global intertwining operator is the ones which appear in the Eisenstein series, constant term of Eisenstein series. And now you can write, and I wrote down this before. So this becomes the partial L function. And tensor with a local intertwining operator. Okay, local intertwining operators. Okay, so now let's normalize this. Let's normalize this so that we may have, you can have the full L function. Okay? So now so that means it's clear how to normalize. So let's normalize. So we want to normalize this. This is an unnormalized operator. We may normalize so that we may have this full L function here. So the normalization goes as follows. So we normalize. So we define. This is global, but now let's do it for local situation. So let pi be an irreducible admissible representation of local field. F is local field. Okay, so the defined we normalize the operator we usually denote by N. N as pi W naught. So we normalize. So we have to multiply by this, divide by this. Okay, so normalized in this way. I equals 1 through M. L 1 plus IS pi RI. IS pi RI. So these are the local L functions we defined. And then, to have a well-behaved intertwining operator, we have to divide by epsilon factors also. So this will not be important, but it will be important for well-behavior. A S pi W naught. Okay, so that's the normalized operator. So we normalized in this way. So then you can see that so this I write down here. So I will save this. So then the global intertwining operator, the global intertwining operator becomes product of I equals 1 through M. So you get the full L function here. So IS pi RI 1 plus IS pi RI. Hold on a second. Epsilon factor seems to be okay, I should put the epsilon factor on the top. Sorry. So let's. Okay, so I want to put the epsilon factor in the bottom. So V pi RI. Okay? And tensor product, so we don't have to divide anything. Divide into S or not in S. So you get pi V. W naught F V. Okay, so this is the identity we'll use over and over again. So I will not erase this. Yeah. In this case, the epsilon factors are all one because outside S, is unrarefied, so epsilon naught. So you don't have to worry about epsilon fact. Okay, so this is the one we use over and over again. All right. So this is the normalized local intertwining operator. Okay. So in this case, now we want the poles. We want to get rid of poles from this one. So we want to include the pole only on the L function. So we want to have some kind of a conjecture there. So conjecture is this. Let me write down this conjecture. Conjecture is that this is well behaved. So conjecture is that this local intertwining operator is holomorphic and non-vanishing for real S bigger than or equal to 1/2. Okay, so actually this should be true for zero. We should be able to go down to zero. Okay, but right now that's too much to ask. So we 1/2 is we need at this moment. I mean zero. You should be able to go down to zero. But that's too much to ask. I mean, but for this one, we can prove in many cases. All right. So let's see how this can be proved for many special case. Archimedean is fine. Archimedean is fine. So this is fine. Fine for Archimedean places. I think it's okay for even zero for Archimedean places. Okay, so let's divide into several cases. So first, pi is supercuspidal. Okay, so I will just do for non-Archimedean cases. Okay. So pi is supercuspidal, we have that number 4 there, number 4. We have number 4. Okay, so let me write down, okay, so look at the number 4 there. And look at this normalized operator. So according to number 4, if pi is supercuspidal, this thing is entire and non-vanishing. So pi is supercuspidal, okay, let me write down. So in this case, 1 over I equals 1 through M, I S pi R I A S pi W naught is entire and non-vanishing. Okay, so the only pole will come from the numerator. So numerator, you can have pole at where? Negative 1 or 1/2. Okay. So the pole, so N S pi W naught is holomorphic and non-vanishing except possibly at real part of S is negative 1 or negative 1/2. because the pole will come from this factor. So remember that when you have a supercuspidal, I is greater than 3, so trivial, okay, identically 1. So you don't have to worry about I equals 1 or 2. So it's 1 plus S or 1 plus 2S. So this is fine. Number 4.
No, but
it's pole. Oh, yeah. Pole is the number 5. Yeah, that's right. Okay, so supercuspidal is very easy. And now second, pi is tempered and generic. So let's look at pi is both tempered and generic. Okay, so in this case, we know by Harishchandra. So Harishchandra proved that this unnormalized operator, behaves well for real S bigger than zero. So the Harishchandra proved that this operator is holomorphic and non-vanishing for real S bigger than zero. Okay? So this is fine. Okay? Now the L function, we have to show that these are holomorphic. I mean, this has never zero, so if you can show that it's holomorphic, then that's fine. So that thing leads to now conjecture of Shahidi. Remember that? When pi is tempered, we conjecture that this is holomorphic for real S bigger than zero. And we can prove that all except 4 cases. Remember that? So this, the conjecture, this was the 11th conjecture of Shahidi, says that this L function is holomorphic for real S bigger than zero. Okay? And this is true. We can prove that for except 4 cases, except for a small number of cases. So these are both holomorphic, so that means that this entire thing is fine. Okay, so in this case, so here we need this conjecture of Shahidi for this tempered case. So this normalized operator is holomorphic and non-vanishing for real S bigger than zero. Okay, and the real S equals zero, for real S equals zero, at the unitary axis, you have to use the theory of R group. Okay? So there's the R group theory, the theory of R group. So Nepstein R group theory shows that this normalized operator is fine also. So the theory of R group says that this is holomorphic and non-vanishing. For real S equal to zero. Okay, so for pi is tempered, then it's fine. Life is easy, okay? But now, oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. R group doesn't matter. Okay, now most difficult cases when pi is non-tempered. Okay, before going there, there is a special case. So this is holomorphic and non-vanishing for real s greater than or equal to zero. Okay, that's true for arbitrary case. Okay, but for special case of GLN, so this is a proposition. So this is originally due to Mogul and Weisperger, but this is a special case. So this is very important in non-tempered case, in applying non-tempered case. So this is originally due to Mogul and Weisperger. So let the sigma and tau be a tempered representation of GL K and GL L respectively. Then the normalized operator, then the normalized operators, sigma tensor tau W naught. So this is the normalized operator for this induced representation. So this, according to our general result, this should be holomorphic and non-vanishing for real s bigger than zero, but actually in this case it's much more true. So it's holomorphic and non-vanishing for real s bigger than negative one. So you can go down to negative one. So this will be crucial. This will be crucial in our application. You can go down to negative one. So this is approved by Mogul and Weisperger in their paper on the residual spectrum of GLN. But this you can prove quite easily if you use Kesselman and Shahidi result about if you use the injectivity. So let me prove. You know, this is just one line proof actually. So this is equal to, if you look at this, so at GLN case, m equals 1. So this is just the L function, 1 plus S sigma tau, S sigma tau, epsilon, and A. Okay, this. And for GLN satisfies injectivity property, according to Kesselman and Shahidi. Basically, what that means is that any generic discrete series always occurs as a sub representation. I mean, anyway, you don't have to. What? Yeah, Bernstein and Zelevinsky. I mean, Kesselman and Shahidi show that if injectivity holds, then this thing is entire. Okay? So, this thing is fine. So the only pole will come from the pole of this L function. So this pole of L function will, this is tempered. That means that this is always holomorphic for real S bigger than, actually negative one. Okay? Negative one. So, okay, so that's the proof. So Mogul and Weisperger, they, you know, you realize sigma and real s are sub-representation of discrete series, spare representation, and they analyze very detailed. But this you can prove in one line if you use Kesselman and Shahidi result. All right, so now let's go on to non-tempered case. That's the most difficult. Okay, so since I want to do holomorphy, so I will skip many steps. So I mean, it will be on the note. So I will just explain the main steps of how you take care of non-tempered case. Non-tempered generic. Okay, so in this case, the main ingredient we need is the so-called standard module conjecture. Okay, so let me explain what they are. So let pi be a generic irreducible non-tempered representation of, let's say, GF. F is a local field. Okay. And by Langlands classification, so Langlands classification result is that pi is the Langlands quotient. Okay? So pi is a Langlands quotient. So let me denote by J lambda naught and sigma. So this is Langlands quotient. Quotient of I lambda naught sigma, where sigma is tempered and lambda naught is in the positive Weyl chamber. So this is a positive Weyl chamber. Positive Weyl chamber with respect to this parabolic subgroup. Anyway, I hope this is clear. So standard module conjecture is that, so we call this standard module. So we call I lambda naught sigma standard module. Okay, so the standard module conjecture is that so pi is the quotient of this. Okay, standard module conjecture is that pi is basically this fully induced representation. So pi is actually this. So this is irreducible. This is irreducible. So whenever you have a generic non-tempered, generic, yeah, this is the key here. So if you have a generic non-tempered, then that's the full induced representation, okay? And this is unknown in many cases. I mean, almost all cases except special case like classical groups and... Okay, okay, that's a lot, okay. Okay, so classical group cases due to Mutsch. And GLN is true, okay. And this is true for Archimedean places. So Archimedean places is okay. So Archimedean places is true. I think this is the result of Vaughan. And for periodic places is very recent. I mean, some results are very recent. Okay, so the reason we needed this is the following. So let pi be this, lambda naught sigma. Then by inducing in stages, this induced representation becomes, it's inducing from the lower parabolic subgroups, sigma x alpha tilde plus lambda naught h p1. And so this intertwining operator for this induced representation is an intertwining operator for this induced representation. S alpha tilde plus lambda naught sigma omega naught. The sigma is tempered now. Okay, so if we don't know this equality, then we'll have the sub. And so then this will be restriction to restriction to this server representation. Okay? And so even if we can show that this, so you can normalize in the same way. You can normalize in the same way. You can normalize in the same way. So now we can show that these are well behaved. Holomorphic and non-vanishing. Okay? So holomorphic is fine even if you restrict that, but we'll have a trouble with non-vanishing. Because even if these are holomorphic and non-vanishing, if you restrict to some subset, it may vanish. Okay, so In order to avoid that problem, we need this equality. We should not restrict to any subset. So that's why we need this equality for non-vanishing. We need non-vanishing of this in this here, so that the pole all can be included in the L function. Okay, so that's why we need this, the standard module conjecture. All right. Alright, so let me. Okay, so let me explain how to prove for non-tempered case using one example. Okay. So let's look at the example of classical groups. That's what Jim is going to use in the next week. Okay, so let's look at example. I wanna look at GLN, GLK cross SP. SP doesn't matter. But let's simplify. Let's say SO 10 plus 1. Inside SO 2K plus N plus 1. So let's look at this situation. Okay. So this is a Levy subgroup. So now we are given a non-tempered representation of sigma of GLK and non-tempered representation of SOR. Okay, so then we have this induced representation, sigma tensor tau. So this is induced. So this will be our G. And this is a sigma determinant of S tensor tau. So this is our induced representation. Okay. So I mean everything is local. So sigma is if the sigma and tau are a local component of cuspidal representation, they are unitary. So sigma and tau are unitary representation. So now we have complete classification of unitary representation of GL. So this is due to Tadic. So Tadic's classification of unitary representation. So we have to write down pi as a Langlands quotient. So we have to write everything to the tempered situation. So sigma is, remember that sigma is tempered, non-tempered, unitary, and generic. It's generic. So if you look at Tadic's classification, any non-tempered unitary representation is of the following form. Sigma is full induced. Where am I? Okay, sigma is full induced determinant of R1, sigma 1, determinant of R2, sigma 2, da da da, determinant of RK, sigma K, and sigma k plus 1 sigma k plus p tensor sigma determinant of minus r k sigma k okay, I don't have to. Okay, so let's look at all temporary. So, sigma k plus 1 tensor with determinant of minus R1, sigma 1. Here, sigma i's are tempered, and Rk is greater than 0, R1 less than 1 half. Yeah, tempered, not discrete series. If you allow discrete series, then we'll have two terms, but tempered, then you get, you can just put together. Okay, so that's the complete classification. All right. Now, tau is now generic non-tempered representation. So now this Muich show that the standard module conjecture is true. So tau is the full induced representation. It's a full induced. So you get determinant of let me write down beta 1. Beta 1, tau 1. Beta L, tau L, tau naught. Here tau 1, tau L are tempered. Tempered representation of GL and tau naught is a generic tempered. Representation of SO odd. So small SO. So this is the Langdon situation. Okay, so Muich can tell you that this is, you have that, but we need some bound for this exponent. Okay? And that's not trivial actually. And then it's a lot of work and I'll write down in my note how you get the beta 1. It's less than 1. We need less than 1. Okay, so this thing I'll put in my note. Okay, so that's not true. We have to use some global argument. Okay, but anyway, we have 1, less than 1. Of course, when you have functoriality, which I did with the Cocktail and Charity and PS, then you can get 1 half here. So that's the ultimate. But 1 half is, even getting this bound is not that trivial. Less than 1. Okay, so now we put together, put everything back. So then, this will be the full induced representation. So you put this back, then you get, what do you get? You get determinant of R1 plus S, sigma 1, determinant of R2 plus S, sigma 2, determinant of RK plus S, sigma k, determinant of s, sigma k plus 1, determinant of s minus rk, sigma k, determinant of s minus r1, sigma 1, and then you put this here. So you get determinant of beta 1, tau 1, determinant of beta L tau L and tau naught. So we have this. Okay, you don't have to write. I mean, everything will be in my note. So if you don't want to write, then that's fine. Okay. Anyway, so now everything is tempered. Inducing from tempered now. Everything is tempered. Okay? So now normalized operator, so this will be the normalized operator. And remember the co-cycle relation for, remember the co-cycle relation for intertwining operator? So you can write this a product of rank one operator. Rank one operators are basically operator attached to maximal parabolic subgroups. So what are the rank one operators? Rank one operators are basically ranking Selberg attached to this. So you take all the possible combinations. Rank one, ranking Selberg. Either this one and that one. I mean, except that you get the zero. If you don't get S term, then that's not a possible combination. So you get this one and basically this one and that one and this one, so all the possible combination anyway, this one and this one itself, this one and the tau naught, that will be the Rankine Selberg of GL cross SOR. And now what do you know? But now we use this property. So remember that the real part of S is greater than equal to 1/2. We are only interested in that. So let's look at the GL cross SOR. GL cross SOR, sigma 1, tau naught. You can see that in this range, all the range are greater than equal to zero. So the worst case, what is the worst case? Worst case is this one. S minus R1. And R1 is less than 1/2 here. So that saves us here. So that's fine. So GL cross SOR is okay. What about GL cross GL? What about GL cross GL? So worst case is, what is the worst case? Worst case is if you subtract this one and this one. Worst possible case is this one. So S minus R1 minus beta 1. So that's the worst possible case. So this one and this one. That's the lowest value you can get. Now, what saves us is this one. Yeah. This is what saves us. You see, if S is greater than 1/2, but then this is less than 1. So this is greater than, so real part of, this is greater than negative 1. S, real part of S is greater than 1/2. And R1 can get at most 1/2. And beta 1 get at most 1. So this whole thing is greater than negative 1. So now we use the, I just erased the Mogul and Rasmussen result. Mogul and Rasmussen result shows that intertwining operator is fine also. Then we use Mogul and Rasmussen, yeah.
somebody qualified. So the quality that I give is that is something else.
Okay, so if it is one half, we have, so if you put one half there, so then you can, move on to real S bigger than zero. Okay, you can go down to zero. So that's the ultimate, here, the conjecture is that you can go down to zero. That's, you get the one. If you have a one half here, then you can go down to zero. So that's what we have. Okay, so that's the main argument here. Oh, because our induced representation is S only on the, it's only on the GL side. All right, so now our proof, I skipped many details. He said especially getting that tone is less than one. That's, it's quite involved. So I skipped that. So if you are interested, you can look at the note. Alright, so now I will give an argument about holomorphy. So this will go to section chapter 13, holomorphy and boundedness in vertical strings. Okay, so I will prove boundedness in vertical strings. Next week, I'll just prove holomorphy. Okay, so in order to prove holomorphy, we use this. So, if you're not familiar with Eisenstein series, the only thing you have to remember from Eisenstein series is only three things. One is this. And the other one is the non-constant term. So let me write down non-constant term. Okay, so this comes from the constant term, and this comes from the non-constant term. So you get the L function in the denominator. And the third thing you have to remember is that this is holomorphic, unless, you have to only remember three things, basically, Eisenstein series. So you can ignore everything else for the application of L functions. So this is entire, this is holomorphic for real S bigger than or equal to zero if P is non-self conjugate or the pi is not invariant under the Weyl group elements. Okay, so these three things are the only thing we need from Eisenstein series. Okay, then everything else is just basically, you can say formal, basically. Okay, so the following theorem, so let me write down the theorem. So in order to get this, in general, this will not be true. So in order to do this, in order to get this thing, we have to twist by highly ramified character, gross end character, which is high ramified at a certain place. So let pi be a b a unitary generic cuspidal representation of M A. Okay. So now we assume this conjecture. So assume the conjecture. Is holomorphic and non-vanishing for real S bigger than 1/2. Then there exists a Grossman character chi such that. So if you twist by that character, this is entire. Entire and has no zeros for real S bigger than or equal to 1. So we can prove these two things simultaneously. Okay, so the proof. So we fix a place, let's say W, where pi W is spherical. Then we can choose, so by Grunewald-Wang theorem, we can choose a Grossman character. So Grunewald-Wang theorem is that basically what does it say? It says that if you are given a finitely many local characters, then you can choose a Grossman character which has that local characters at the given place. Okay? So it's that's right. So what it say? So what it's saying is that given a local characters, let's say chi, V is in S. You can find Grossman character chi such that is let's say psi eta v such that chi v is eta v for v is in S. Okay, so you can find the Grossman character which specified local characters. So we can choose a Grossman character chi such that the following is satisfied. Such that first chi W is highly ramified. So ramification will depend on this property. So that's the next. The W naught pi, if you twist by chi, this is not equal. So this we control this ramification. You certainly can do that. That if you twist by chi, then it's not invariant under W naught. Okay? Because if G is semi-simple, W naught send central character pi to AC inverse. So, if chi W is not quadratic, square is ramified, then certainly that will be true in many cases. And three, W naught prime, pi I prime tensor with chi is not equivalent. Where for all I, where pi I prime is such that LS pi RI is LS pi I prime R1 prime. So remember that by induction, this ith L function becomes the first L function in some other group. Okay? So we choose chi so that this is also, again, not invariant. Okay, so then by this proposition, so because of that property, and the both are holomorphic for real S bigger than or equal to 0. Alright? So now let's drop chi, okay? Let's drop chi. Because you don't wanna keep writing chi. So we'll drop chi. Okay, drop chi. Okay, so now let's look at this is the first equation here. So left hand side is holomorphic for real S bigger than 0. Okay? And now this thing is non-vanishing. Holomorphic and non-vanishing real S bigger than 1/2. Okay, what does that mean? That means that this thing is holomorphic. So by that, so that implies that this quotient of L function is holomorphic for real S bigger than equal to 1/2. Because the epsilon factor is well behaved. This is just the monomial. So it's just just a polynomial function, a to the sum s. So it has neither zero nor pole, epsilon factor. Okay, so that's holomorphic. Okay, now we start where start at real S is big and not where this thing is absolutely convergent. Okay, you start where real S is very big and this is absolutely convergent. So this is holomorphic. And then we move one by one to the left. Okay, so this is the picture. Okay, I'll be done. I'm safe today. Okay, so this is N naught. So you have N naught inverse. So this is fine. Okay, so so IS pi RI, the product. So this is product of the quotient I equals 1 through M 1 plus IS. So this thing is holomorphic. And so this will be holomorphic. This will be holomorphic in this region. Okay, so that means that this thing will be, this is holomorphic for real S bigger than N0 minus 1. Actually, so this is a holomorphic for real S bigger than equal to 1/2, and this is holomorphic for real S bigger than N0 minus 1. Without 1, 1, you get holomorphic. Okay, so you can move 1 left. Okay, so I guess we should start with the N0 is the half integer. But anyway, so if you keep doing it, but what I'm saying is that this thing will be holomorphic. Holomorphic for real S bigger than or equal to 1/2. Okay, so that's the, you keep moving one by one, so you get that. Okay, so now we have to divide. What? What? Why we did that? Why did? Oh, 1 plus 2s is fine. 1 plus 2s is fine. Why? But anyway, so now we have to divide by. Now, what saves us is that this is pi r1, 2s pi r2. Now, this thing, you have to show that this thing has no zero. And now that one, we have to use this one. We have to use this one. So by induction, that's why we need this thing also. So if you use induction, so then we can conclude that S pi ri has no zero for real S bigger than or equal to 1. So this thing all have no zero. So that means that is holomorphic for real S bigger than equal to 1/2. Okay, now we use a functional equation. So we use a functional equation. Okay, then this is anti. Okay, so this is entire, and I mean this thing, the second one will show that, okay, I will be done in one minute, okay? So this thing will show that has no zero for real S bigger than or equal to zero. So that will be from this part. This is holomorphic. Then the Eisenstein series is holomorphic. So that means that the denominator should not have zero. So this is no zero. And so if you apply induction, then so this is, and the local L function does not have zero, so you can put full L function. So this is 1 plus S pi r1, 1 plus 2s pi r2. This whole thing has no zero, but now we know that this is holomorphic. This entire thing is holomorphic, so that shows that this has no zero. So that's how induction goes. No. We have to leave it. So we apply our converse theorem with, we apply converse theorem with this one. That one. That's right, exactly. So because without chi, it might have pole. So if only after you twist by high, this kind of characters, then you get rid of poles. Okay, so next week I'll summarize the arguments for boundedness and vertical street, and then I'll explain the functoriality in a simple terms, and then hopefully we can give you the simplest case of the functoriality, namely symmetric square. You can prove functoriality symmetric square first, and with this technique, and the symmetric cube and symmetric fourth, I'll do that the last week.